Again, we are very pleased that we are allowed to assemble together this morning for the purpose of worshiping God, for rendering unto God a service that will be accounted unto us for righteousness. And truly we believe that just as in the olden times, when God had his priests serving him there in the tabernacle and later in the temple, and as he observed that service, and as he was concerned and pleased as this service was done according to his will, we feel that we today stand in the same place. That we are serving the same God. We are attempting to satisfy the same needs and to please the same holy and divine government as those priests were of old as they stood in the Temple of Solomon. So this morning we are, so far as we're concerned, in the right place. We are in the realm of the church, and we're assembled together according to His will to serve God. And our Savior has promised us that where two or three are gathered together in My name, there will I be in the midst of them. Our study this morning is to continue in this third chapter of 1 John. Last time we'd gotten well into the first chapter, and we just about finished the first chapter, the first verse of this third chapter. But I would like to go back and just review a little bit now about this first verse. The theme for our first several verses of the third chapter is set really in the last verse of the second chapter, verse 29. He says, "If you know that he is righteous, you know that everyone that doeth righteousness is born of him." Now this verse implies several things to us. If we know that he is righteous, then those that are born of him do righteousness, and conversely, vice versa, those that do righteousness are born of him. That is, they are begotten of him. And so this tells us several things then. If we are his children, we're going to be righteous. And if we're righteous, we're going to be his children. And so the next few verses are really elaborating upon that thought. So in the first verse of the third chapter, he says, "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God." This then is in line with what he said about being born of or being begotten of God. We're the sons of God. Now another conclusion we're going to be able to draw out of this later on is that we'll also be righteous. You know, you just can't be righteous and not be a son, and you can't be a son and not be righteous. A lot of people want to say, I'm a child of God, but they are not righteous. They do not live the kind of a life that is consistent with the fact that they are a child of God. Well, so he says, "Behold, what manner of love the Father bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of God." This seemed to trigger that thought in the mind of the apostle in the previous verse when he said that we're born of him or begotten of him, the thought that this required a lot of love on the part of God. And you know, we discussed last time how that it was a great, great sign of love on the part of any person in this life who would take another person, another human being, into their home and give them all of the rights and all of the privileges that that home has to offer its own sons. This means then that you provide them with everything that you have. What you have is theirs. And what you have will eventually be their inheritance. It's going to be a part of theirs. And so that's the love then that God has had for us. Here we are, mere specks, little flecks of dust, you might say, on this cinder that's hurling through space known as earth. And yet God has given us an inheritance of a part of the things that he possesses. And so it is a tremendous amount of love that he would do this for us. Well, we read some passages last time that re-emphasized this particular position that we have in Romans 8, verses 14 through 17. Let me read that again. "For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God. For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together." Another verse that we read, and I'd like to read again, is 2 Corinthians 6, verses 17 through 18. Wherefore come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Now this is a quotation from the Old Testament, which is given again in the New Testament, and it does apply to us today as Christians. And what he's saying here is simply that if we come out from among them, that is, if we're different from the world, we become those that are not conformed to the world, and we touch not the unclean thing, which happens to be sin, then he says, I will receive you. Now that's what is. Those are the conditions that he names. Come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. It means our lives are going to have to undergo some kind of a change. Our relationship to the rest of the world has to somehow be altered so that we are considered by God as being separate and not touching the unclean thing. Then he says, I'll receive you, and I'll be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. So that this is just a part of this great love and this promise of our being a member of his household. We're the sons and the daughters of him. He's the father. And we have all the rights and privileges that go with being sons and daughters in any household. Well, the rest of this verse, though, in 1 John 3, verse 1, says, therefore, the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Now, what does that mean? The world knoweth us not because it kneweth him not. If you put yourself into this position of receiving this offer from God to be adopted and to be his son or daughter and to come out from among the unclean thing and to be separate and to not touch that unclean thing, then this means that this puts you in such a position that the world does not know you. Now, what does it mean the world doesn't know you? Well, the word know here doesn't mean not to have any knowledge of you, but it means that it does not truly recognize you and have an understanding of you for what you are. The world is not going to recognize you as a member of God's family. The world is not going to recognize you as having any special significance in the sight of God. They're not going to recognize you as the church. Now, this is, of course, truly the history of the church throughout the past 2,000 years or so. The world does not recognize the true church. As you read in the pages of history during the Dark Ages, you will not find the true church listed there. You will find the great apostate church, and you'll find the records of all of the works that that great apostate church has done. That church that has fallen away from the true standing of God. Their works of the Inquisition, of persecuting and punishing and putting to death those who are true Christians, the wars that they've become involved in, the great political powers that it has had, the great cathedrals that they've built, and the terrible doctrines that are so much a heresy and contradictory to the Bible that they hold. Those are found in the pages of history. Those the world does know and recognize, but the true church is not recognized. So the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Now let's look at this a little bit closer, though, this idea of the world knowing us not. In John 15, verses 18 through 20, our Savior said, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my sayings, they will keep yours also. Now that's a very plain and blunt and to the point prophecy that the Savior has made here about his followers and their relationship to the world. He simply is saying that it hated me, and so it's going to hate you. If it persecuted me, then it's going to persecute you. If it kept my sayings, then it would keep your sayings. Well, the world is not keeping the sayings of the Savior. They are not keeping the sayings of the Savior. And so whenever we hold the truth and whenever we teach the truth, the world is not going to receive it. They're not going to accept it. They're not going to be compatible with it. And so we're going to look like a bunch of people who are really odd and strange and who do not fit. That's the way we're going to look to the world, because they're not going to understand our ways. They're not going to understand our beliefs, our practices, not knowing that we're following the Bible, because they don't know what the Bible teaches either. Now, this is very plainly taught in the Bible, and it's simply what John is saying here in our verse this morning, "Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not."